Welcome in, everybody, to the Locked On Eagles podcast. It's Louis DiBiase, as always, alongside my co-host, Gino Camilleri. Gino, we are three stinking days away. Well, I mean, we got today, we got tomorrow, we got Wednesday, and then Thursday is the big day we've been waiting for month after month after month. I mean, it's been a really fun process going through all the draft talk, all the Locked On the Mocks, all the prospect analysis. But, dude, how excited are you that we're just, I mean, we're 3 days away from going live?
72 hours, man.
That's right.
I'm so fired up. This week, I'm surprised today went as fast as it did, but I expect tomorrow and Wednesday to go pretty slow because I'm super juiced up. We've been talking for how long now, Lou?
Combine, even before, like the Senior Bowl, we had Michael Kist on, and that's when I found my love for Bruce Anderson. So I mean, it's been months.
Yeah, it was just as soon as the playoffs ended, we had a little grieving period there, We went right to it, and so it's been what, almost 3 months now, just talking shop, and we're here, man. Where I'm confident that this team has crossed all their T's, dotted all their I's, and they're ready to go. I think they're sitting in a good position with a lot of versatility in the ways they can go. And all the news coming out of the NFL today, the Raiders could make a surprise pick at 4.
Yeah, some crazy headlines. You know, Montez Sweat.
Crazy headlines.
Potentially falling out of the first round. Yeah, the Raiders thing. I mean, I don't know who that is. The first name that popped in my mind for like a crazy pick, I mean, maybe a quarterback. I was thinking like if they take Josh Jacobs
Hockenson.
There. Hockenson.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking Jacobs too, because if you remember back, Daniel Jeremiah mocked Jacobs in the top 5, like a couple months ago.
He thinks he's a top 10 prospect in this whole draft.
Yeah, I mean, Gruden loves his smash mouth football, and what more of a surprise than to take a running back at number 4? Who knows? But, Lou, we're in crazy season, we're almost here. Let's just continue to paint with a broad stroke and put out some good information like we always do and like we did today in our Eagles Twitter mock draft that finally came out. And you guys could check that out. Lou tweeted it out. I tweeted it out. Everybody, Justin Grasso, Andrew DiCecco, Liam Jenkins, Reese Malem, Tyler Steggy, and Lars Lewis, they all tweeted it out. So go follow them. Go give it a read because Lou said it before we got on that when he was just pre-reading the draft before he published it, that it was a fun read to get through, and I thought it was too, and just reading everybody's input on all their different prospects, it's really cool to see that everybody, it's just not a groupthink mentality, that everybody looks at different prospects a different way, and it's cool to challenge our opinions that me and you agree a lot on a lot of things, Lou, but when we were doing that mock draft, they were pushing our ideologies, and it was cool to see different perspectives on different players, and come Thursday, we'll find out which teams actually value those different perspectives and see who is actually right.
Yeah, and it starts with a surprise. That's all I'll tell you first overall, and then it kind of goes from there. And it might not even be a surprise depending on if some of these reports are true today. I mean, there's the whole talk that the Cardinals might not take Kyler Murray at 1, although Todd McShay says it's all but 99.9%, you know, certain that he's going to. It might be, I mean, again, like you said, it's silly season, especially this week. I bet you every front office is just churning out loads of information, some false, some true, just to, you know, whatever leverage they can gain in trade negotiations. Maybe Arizona wants to get San Fran to move up just one spot and grab Bosa if they really want him. Although, I don't know if I'm San Fran, I'd really believe that Arizona would potentially take him. But, I mean, you even saw it in 2017. Chicago moved up just one spot to
San Francisco. Played a hell of a hand there.
Because they wanted Solomon Thomas all along, but I think they made Chicago believe in some shape or form that either they were going to take Troops themselves or they were going to trade the pick to somebody else, and the Bears gave up a good amount of ammo for just that one pick. So you never know what kind of leverage you can gain by releasing all this kind of information. So again, just take it all with a grain of salt. Me and Gino even did a podcast at the start of the offseason kind of warning you guys about how to prepare yourselves for the offseason, specifically the draft as well. And a big thing that we harped on was that final week before the draft, it can get silly. I mean, it is silly season. Mm-hmm. It's speculation season. So that's what it is this week. And I thought the mock draft really ties into that well because we had some awesome picks, a lot of interesting, intriguing ones. And like you said, very different from the typical groupthink. On today's podcast, we're going to get into, I mean, we've done so much awesome stuff, I think, on the podcast. We hope you guys have enjoyed it. On Friday, we had Graham Barfield on of NFL.com Fantasy getting into that side of the draft. You know, we've done our Locked on the Mocks, the All My Guy team. team we did last week, which was really fun. I thought me and Gino's squads were super interesting, so we do recommend you check that out. And as for today, we're going to get into some of the later round potential gems that me and Gino think could pan out to be studs in the NFL, could be high-level starters, potentially even stars. We're going to give three late-round potential gems on offense and three on defense each because, you know, we've done our Locked on the Mocks and we've both kind of been really interested. A couple late-round guys have had our eye, but I thought it'd be interesting to get really in-depth on it now that we are only a couple days away, just to get you a little bit more familiar that, yeah, of course, Thursday is the most exciting part of the draft, but what about Friday and Saturday? You know, that Saturday when there's three rounds of drafting going on, make sure that you know some names still there can end up being legitimate players in the NFL and on an immediate notice in their rookie year coming
Avante
up.
Avante Maddox. Team.
That's right, Avante Maddox. I mean, yeah, we saw it with the Eagles just last year. And, hey, Jalen Mills in 2016, he was a seventh-round draft pick. Corey Clement, undrafted. So we want to get you guys familiar with some more names later in the draft. So that's coming up next right here on the Locked on Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked on Eagles, this Monday edition of the show. It's our last Monday before the NFL draft. So next week, Monday, we will know who the Eagles have taken at pick 25.
Crazy.
Or dare I say, Gino, pick maybe 15, maybe 16, maybe pick 32. You never know. But Monday, we'll actually know who they're going to take.
Lou, I don't think they're trading up. Like, I just don't think they want to get rid of more picks. I think we might have to wait until Friday to see a selection, in all honesty. I just have a weird feeling that Howie, he feels comfortable with where he is if one of the guys falls, like one of the top-end guys. But I don't know if it's going to happen. And I can really see that talent pool, like, right between, like, 30 to 40 being all around the same. Like, if you're taking Darnell Savage at 30 or Jerry Tillery at 30, it's just going to be about the same as like drafting a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside at 40 for me. Like, the trade-offs in that area are too great to have to worry about overdrafting like the next tier offensive tackle at 25, like Dalton Risner. I'll take Risner in the mid-30s, but I don't want to take him at 25. So I just think with where they're sitting with draft capital with seven, I think they want to get closer to eight or nine picks, and they want to have some capital to get in between 57 and 127 because no way Howie Roseman is waiting that long. And one of the only ways to do so is trade back, much like they did last season. But we'll see. Howie Roseman always leaves us on the edge of our seat. We're going to be in for something. Something big's going to happen. Nobody's going to sit still. There's going to be a wild selection in the top five. There's going to be a trade that throws everything off. And, hey, you know what, Lou? They might be picking in the top 10 for all we know.
Right. I mean, it really just depends on how the board falls. If it doesn't cost a whole lot, maybe they even decide to give up pick 25 for Frank Clark, which we got into that on last week as well.
Yes,
you
please.
Never know. I mean, yeah, I'm all in on that too. So if that could be a possibility, there is an endless amount. But regardless of what they do, they have plenty of draft picks this year. Even if they move up, they're going to have a lot of ammo this year to add young, cheap talent to what is a pretty loaded roster in a win-now situation. But you know, we have 2 fourth-round draft picks, 2 sixth-round picks. Day 2 and day 3 is going to be really big for this organization. It has been for the past couple of drafts. They have added some really nice value later on in the drafts. Even I count Halepulivahti-Vaitai with a fifth-round selection, even though he's been very up and down. I mean, the fact that you could get him playing at the level he was when they won the Super Bowl, I mean, that's good value in the fifth round. So what we're going to get into now, as we hinted in the first segment, is some late-round gems that the Eagles could take, and even if they don't, that me and Gino think whoever selects these guys could be potential gems in the NFL, starting really their rookie year and then moving forward. You see it all the time at running back, at wide receiver, at any position. There are late-round guys that have scouts, have the media, have fans thinking, how the hell did that dude fall that far? So what we're going to do here in the first segment of this game here, we're going to kind of play getting into some late round gems. We're going to do 3 offensive players, and then when we come back from break, we'll get into 3 defensive players each. So Gino, I want to start with you. Give me a player that you think, let's say after really the second, maybe mid to end of the third round, really more specifically day 3 players that could be the next, you know, steal of the NFL draft. Who's a guy on offense that comes to your mind first?
Yeah, a guy that I've shown a little bit of love to over the draft season here is my guy Jamal Custis out of Syracuse. I did a little Twitter thread a couple weeks back, went through a couple games of his. Jamal's out of Syracuse, big-bodied wide receiver, 6'5", 228 pounds, downfield threat. That's all he is. But with a guy that has – he's a long strider. He can create separation at the top of the stem, and he has pretty good speed downfield. I mean, he didn't run off the charts 40. I forgot what his exact time was, but he's running around 4.5, 4.6. He's not the best route runner. He runs a lot of nine routes. He runs a lot of outside breaking, inside breaking, mm-hmm. post, deep post patterns. But he's a guy that when you get the ball in the air, his tracking is immaculate. Like, you look at a guy like Mecole Hardman when he's tracking the football, how he doesn't lose it in stride, and he'll just continue to run. If he's running 15 miles an hour under the ball, he's going to be running 16 miles under the ball when he gets it. Jamal Custis is a guy just like that. He can track the ball in stride, a very long strider, and when he goes up to get the ball, he's going to come down with it 9 times out of 10.
I also have a wide receiver I think later on could be a steal for teams, and it's someone that we love the name of, Lil Jordan Humphrey from Texas.
Oh, yeah, your boy.
Yeah, so if Philadelphia, I mean, some people think that if they're going to replace Nelson Agholor, it might be with a bigger slot receiver, right? They have shown interest in Ole Miss's A.J. Brown, N'Keal Harry, right? Deebo Samuel, although I think Deebo Samuel can do more than, I don't know. When I think of big slot receivers, Jordan Matthews is the first guy that comes to mind. Not necessarily, I mean, they don't have to be that limited, but I think if Philadelphia did want to go that route, right, and add some more size inside, but have a guy that has potential to do more down the road, I think Lil Jordan Humphrey's a guy that you can get, I don't know, fifth, sixth, maybe even the seventh round that could be a steal. I love the way he plays. I mean, in the slot, he was extremely dominant on third down. Of any FBS receiver, Lil Jordan Humphrey had the most receiving yards on third down with 365. That was ahead of guys like, you know, Dylan Mitchell from Oregon was up there. There was a lot of players inside, and Lil Jordan Humphrey was number one. He's just a big dude that, and he is impossible to take down. It's crazy how Texas used this guy almost like a running back of some sorts. They would do a lot of direct snap plays, and just, you know, he has a crazy wingspan. I just want to throw out some stats here for Humphrey just to get you more familiar with him. When he was targeted, the quarterback of Texas's passer rating, 113.8. He forced 26 missed tackles. Pro Football Focus really liked this guy. He had the most explosive plays of any Big 12 receiver, which is 20-plus yard plays. That's 37, and that's ahead of a guy in Hakeem Butler, who's probably going to be a first-round pick. So those are two big bodies that in the Big 12 were able to make big plays. The difference is, you know, Humphrey is someone that you could probably get in, again, that day three range, and you don't really have to have a set plan for what you want at receiver, right? Because if you take one in the first round, the writing is on the wall for either Nelson Agholor or DeSean Jackson within the next year or two. If you take Lil Jordan Humphrey, you can kind of see what you got with him. You don't have to decide right away on what you want to do with Nelson Agholor, and Humphrey could potentially be that guy on the inside, and I think he has potential to play on the outside. Gino, who's another offensive guy for you?
Yeah, a guy that we've mentioned a lot later on in our drafts, a replacement for Jason Peters, Oli Udoh,
like,
out of
one.
Elon. Say Oli Udoh, offensive tackle out of Elon, 10 times fast. Bet you can't do it. But no, Oli is a guy who he's gotten a lot of praise from a lot of scouts in this draft Twitter community. He was a guy, he's a smaller school guy out of Elon. I can't even name the conference that they play in. I think they play with like Delaware in that conference, if I'm not mistaken. But he's a small school guy, got a lot of praise at the Senior Bowl. He's a big, big kid, 6'6", 327 pounds. That's an absolute mammoth of a human being. His best trait by far is his play strength. He's a bigger offensive tackle, as you can imagine, as an athlete. He's not the most versatile guy, but we've seen Jason Peters do just fine playing like that. Jason Peters isn't the most limber, but he's a guy that developed his feet, developed his hands, and
right,
capitalized on his play strength, and that's something that Oli Udoh can do. He's going to be there later because he's a smaller school guy. He's not refined in his feet or his hands, but you get him in an offensive line coached by one of the best coaches in the league at teaching offensive line, and you have quite the combination. You want as many developmental talents at tackle as you possibly can. Because one, you want guys that you can develop to learn how to play the position. Look at how great Jason Peters is. He was a raw product coming out as a tight end. You completely taught his skill set from day one to be an offensive tackle. Same with Jordan Mailata. Same with a big, unrefined guy like Big V. And you see what you can take out of these guys. Are all of them going to work? No. But can they be serviceable players like Big V and potentially be an asset down the line that you could trade? Absolutely. And Oli Udo, he's a boomer bust type guy, but you could still get a lot of value out of him, especially later in this class.
He has a lot of upside. I think he would be a great pick for the Eagles in the mid rounds. Real quick before I get to my next guy, I had another stat on little Jordan Humphrey I wanted to get to too, because he's very dependable. It's funny. My offensive dudes are just literally
funny,
my guys.
Man.
They're just my guys. But here is a stat about little Jordan Humphrey from, it was Steve Palazzolo of PFF. I can never get his last name right. I think it's Palazzolo. I think that sounds right.
I'm not sure.
Top wide receiver grades in the draft class on passes thrown catchable but, quote, off target. A crazy deeper PFF stat. DK Metcalf was number one. Little Jordan Humphrey, number two. So he's also a guy that you don't have to be the most accurate quarterback in the world, and he can make a play for you. So, yeah, it's funny. These late-round gems for me on offense are just a bunch of my guys. And another one is, of course, someone you've heard me talk about a lot. We had him on the show. It's Darwin Thompson. Just an
awesome
didn't
piece. Write down his name because I knew
you
were going to pick him.
Yeah, you knew
him.
I was going to. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so SB Nation just wrote a really good piece about Darwin Thompson. Just want to give the author credit. It was Christian DeAndrea. And there was a couple interesting notes here about Darwin that even I talked to him on the podcast about. And it's how much he really worked on his receiving game in that 1 year at Utah State. People kind of go back and forth with him when it comes to his explosion, because he is only 5'8", still, I mean, seventh most broke tackles in the NCAA last year. So the power actually is the part that isn't really questioned about Darwin, but the receiving ability still, in the explosion, the athleticism, and the speed has been something that went back and forth. Then he ran a 4.46 at his pro day. His explosiveness was better than almost anybody, but really two college backs, Daryl Henderson and Bryce Love, according to advanced statistics. So, I mean, this is a player that caught 11 balls for 243 yards and two touchdowns in the second half of the season last year. I think he's going to be, honestly, someone that can be your RB1, and you're going to get him in the fifth, sixth round, because people are kind of concerned about, well, he's really small to be a power back, and I feel like some people are still kind of concerned, is he a Tariq Cohen when it comes to the type of athlete he is? I think if you actually look deep into it, you look at how he is tested out in the offseason. I can't believe this guy was not invited to the combine. He met with the Eagles at the pro day. Darwin told Locked On Eagles that he actually went on the whiteboard with a lot of the Eagles scouts and their assistant running backs coach.
That's an exclusive
for Locked On Eagles. So they put him on the whiteboard. So Philadelphia has their eye on Darwin, and I think you should too. I mean, if you're a fantasy owner, wherever he goes next year, I think Darwin could be that next late running back that booms.
Yeah, and I'm going to stick with your mentality there and go with another running back and somebody that I've mentioned a few times. We really haven't gotten into him too heavily, but we always talk about a Memphis running back. This guy isn't Daryl Henderson. It's Tony Pollard. He's a guy, a freak of an athlete.
Debo Samuel 2.0.
Yeah,
Curtis Samuel 2.0.
Yeah, Curtis Samuel. I was about to say he's not nearly as big as Debo Samuel. Debo is a tank. Tony Pollard's a little shifty little character, much like a Curtis Samuel. 5'11", 200 pounds. He's a guy that he plays like a third down running back, but with his catch, his hand issues, where he has a lot of drops, it's really a question mark. But he's a guy that when you put the ball in his hands, a very, very manufactured touches kind of player, he's explosive. And you just turn on any tape, you watch his 40 time, you watch his testing at the combine, you know how fluid he is. His hips are like jello, like they can move. The guy can scoot is what it comes down to. And you talk about manufactured touches and the types of players in this class that are going to command that, like a guy like Paris Campbell. If you're looking at the value of taking Paris Campbell in probably the late first round, early second, from what we're hearing, Lou, I'd much rather go Tony Pollard in round six or seven and take my chances. Because if you could get the football in his hand, Tony Pollard is going to give you just as much, if not more, than Paris Campbell. I just think what you get out of drafting Paris Campbell in the second round is just about similar to what you would get out of a Tony Pollard in later in the draft.
He's super interesting. I don't know what he's going to be in the NFL. I mean, they could move him. He played a lot of receiver. He played a lot of running
back.
And
that's the thing. That's the kind of player that Doug wants, is that gadget play. Like, why do you think we keep hearing Darren Sproles' name come up so much? Because you can line him up anywhere. He's a matchup nightmare. They haven't been able to get that. I mean, Corey Clement, when he's on the field, he's running the football. Josh Adams, when he's on the field, he's running the football. Wendell Smallwood, when he's on the field, is running the football.
Subpar,
the only guy,
by the way, when they're running the football.
Exactly. But when you put Darren Sproles out there, he's in the backfield and you motion him out. Tony Pollard is a guy that can do just that. And if you want to get younger and stop having to rely on a 30-some-odd-year-old running back, bring in a guy like Tony Pollard. Bring in somebody outside of the norm, outside of that very similar group of backs that they currently have in there now, and shake it up and get younger there with a guy that, if he pans out, could be one of the better chess pieces in the NFL.
He'd probably be someone you could use on special teams too, right?
Oh, running the 40 time he can. Yeah, you could put him anywhere on the field, even put him at cornerback if he feels so just to do so.
Look, I think, you know, this is going to wrap up with my final late round gem on offense. If you want to double dip, let's say they wait, right? Josh Jacobs goes, I don't know, in the first round, say right in front of them at pick 24 to Oakland. I think that's a realistic possibility. Maybe the Colts move up. They've reported today, or the Bleacher Report reported, that the Colts are also very interested in Josh Jacobs. Let's say they pass at 53 and 57. Miles Sanders doesn't fall. Maybe they're not as high on Daryl Henderson at 53. He doesn't fall to 57. Who knows? They wait. Double dip. Go with a guy like Pollard, who you don't have to rely on solely to be either a receiver or a running back. He can be that gadget player for you that also plays on special teams. And then you develop your next running back. You bring him on in the committee. And it's a guy that, again, I talk about all the time. It's a my guy, but Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State, an RB2. I'm going to hammer it into your brains, listeners, that Bruce Anderson is going to be one of the best running backs that comes out of this draft. Again, talk about lined up everywhere. He's someone I think you can put him in the slot. You can put him anywhere. I could see different types. I mean, if you were going with Pollard and a guy like Bruce Anderson in the late rounds, the amount of possibilities that Doug Peterson could have on this offense would be absolutely incredible. There are some really good, I don't know, Gino, if you would, I think you'd probably agree with this. Running back isn't really seen as a crazy top-heavy class this year. I think even Graham Barfield was on the show on Friday. He said it was one of the weaker classes he's seen. But I really, really like the late-round talent at running back and also at receiver.
I agree. And we talk about it when we're doing our Locked on the Mocks, that sixth and seventh pick, it's like, if you really don't have a guy that you think is going to carry your backfield, like if you think Daryl Henderson is going to carry your backfield, can be the guy, and you want to take him at 53 or 57, go ahead. But if you're sitting there and you're like, man, I like Justice Hill, but I think he's just a one-dimensional type back, wait till the sixth and seventh round, because you can grab guys like Bruce Anderson who can develop to be more than that. Guys like Darwin Thompson, guys like Tony Pollard or James Williams if you want that one-dimensional piece. There's so much diversity for the backs in this class, but you don't have to get your bell cow. And the Eagles, the way they're set up right now, are going to continue to be a committee. They wouldn't have gave up a piece for Jordan Howard. They wouldn't keep Corey Clement in-house. They probably wouldn't keep Josh Adams around to compete for a job. Wendell Smallwood is still here. This is a wide open committee. They don't plan on having somebody come in here and be a bell cow back. As badly as some Eagles fans might want it to be, they're going to have the ability to draft the top end pieces at offensive line and defensive line early in this class. And then if they want to wait, you're still getting unbelievable value drafting those guys that we mentioned, and plenty, plenty more, because they all have good skill sets. And the way the NFL values backs now, it's going to continue to shift towards that. It's going to continue to see great players at that respective position get pushed down draft boards because of the positional value.
Even if you go, and this is an interesting part too, even if you want that bell cow back, or let's separate from bell cow back. Let's say you want that running back that can do it all so you can be less predictable on the field. You don't have to, it doesn't always equal, committee doesn't always equal going cheap, and going cheap doesn't always equal finding a one-dimensional player, though. I think Darwin Thompson, I think Bruce Anderson, James Williams caught 200-plus passes at Washington State throughout his career. So just because you wait, which I think if you don't go in the first two rounds, I think you do wait on running back until like rounds 5 and 6 because of the value there, you can still find guys that potentially turn into that clear lead back in the committee. I'm not going to call him a workhorse back, because there really just aren't many left in the league anymore, unless you're Saquon Barkley or Ezekiel Elliott or David Johnson. Most teams have a clear RB1, but they're rotating through guys. Even the Rams, you saw in the playoffs last year, they were going Todd Gurley, but they were going a whole lot of CJ Anderson. So even if you wait, like the guys that me and Gino just mentioned, even a Tony Pollard, I mean, there is a lot of skill, there's a lot of versatility late when it comes to running back. And again, like we mentioned, wide receiver, you can get a speedster like Pollard if you want to put him at receiver, like the Panthers have done with Curtis Samuel coming out of Ohio State. Or if you want to go with the big bodies, guys like little Jordan Humphreys there, Jalen Hurd right from Baylor, another versatile piece.
Yes, sir.
There's a lot of talent here later on. This is one of my favorite draft classes in the past, like, you know, I've been really into the draft, I would say, since 2012, really getting into it. So for the past 7 draft classes, I've been very familiar with. Got to say, Gino, this is one of my favorites.
I think so. I think there's talent. All from the very first time we started talking about this class for defensive line, that you're going to get value all the way through, we've continued to find value at other positions of need for the Eagles. And me and you, we still haven't put out our big boards yet, but I was putting it together, and I had such a – we're only – I'm only doing a top 10, but I could easily name 25 to 30 guys at each respective position that I would not mind seeing in an Eagles uniform.
All right, let's go take a break real quick here on Locked On Eagles, the late round gem edition. We did some offense. Me and Gino gave you 6 names to consider for the Eagles on day 2 and on day 3. When we come back, we got 3 defensive guys each. That's coming up right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, ladies and gentlemen, 2 segments down, 1 to go on this Monday edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. It's the Late Round Gems edition. If you've missed any of our past shows, of course, you can always find them on LockedOnEagles.com, on Twitter, at LockedOnBirds, and at DiBiaseLOE, and Locked and Gino underscore LOE. We are on every podcast platform. Just tell your smart device to play Locked On Eagles. Or, hey, if you want to go read some of our written content, Gino just posted the 2019 Eagles Twitter mock draft we did with Justin Grasso of Inside the Eagles, Liam Jenkins of the Philly Sports Network, Andrew DiCecco of the Eagles Wire on USA Today. Of course, our buddy Lars, our buddy Reese. There, we did an awesome mock draft that I think you're going to be really interested in, and it was really cool to get all those guys from Eagles Twitter joined in. So a lot of content for you as you gear up for Thursday's first round of the 2019 NFL Draft. Let's wrap up the show, Gino, by giving some defensive names people should keep an eye out for, not only for the Eagles, but just to potentially be the next big names of the NFL. I'll start here real quick. I got an edge rusher that me and you actually, we did a mock draft before our last Locked On the Mock, and we got this dude in the 4th round, and I think this would be really good value for a guy with a lot of upside. I'm a big upside guy when it comes to addressing the NFL draft and what I like, and I think a guy in Joe Jackson from Miami, the edge rusher.
I thought you were about to take one of my guys.
No, I'm sticking with Joe Jackson. He's a player that I've been really high on since the start of the process. The 9th highest pass rushing productivity last year. I mean, me and you love Brian Burns, right? Also,
oh, yeah.
Cleveland Farrell, 2 of our favorite pass rushers in this draft, both in the ACC. Joe Jackson's pass rush win percentage was higher than both at 21.7. Burns was 2nd, 19.7, and Cleveland Farrell was 3rd at 18.5. I like Burns and Farrell better than Joe Jackson, but here's the thing. I mean, let's say they go with Jeffrey Simmons in the 1st round, right? They get that interior pass rusher. Let's say they take a running back. Say Miles Sanders does fall to 53. And then one of our boys at safety, let's say Juan Thornhill's at 57. Whatever, just different positions that aren't the edge in those first 3 picks. You can go and get a Joe Jackson if he falls. I don't know if he'll fall in the 4th round. Maybe you try to get back into the 3rd. Or hypothetically, say you move down and that's how you get that extra 3rd. I am all in on Joe Jackson being that other guy with Josh Sweat that you bank on. Okay, now we got these 2 raw, talented players that produced at a high level in the ACC the past 2 years. At least one of these guys should pan out and add to what is already a forceful, dominant defensive line. So Joe Jackson's a dude that I think you can get late day 2, early day 3, and I think you could be reaping the benefits.
Well, I'll stick with the U, And another guy that we mentioned,
I think.
I think
I know who you're going to take.
Oh, yeah, my boy with the greatest name, some of the greatest
let's
hair.
Go.
Sheldrick Redwine, baby.
I had him, too, on my list, so I guess we'll both just talk about him.
All right, yeah, I mean, a guy that in this safety class has kind of fell by the wayside just because it's very top-heavy, this safety class, and because there's guys that are, quote, verbatim from Ian Rappaport, a seemingly unknown in Darnell Savage that is going to be a potential first-round pick. Did you see that? How ludicrous that statement was?
The fact that he is labeled unknown is just – that's not true. It's just simply not true. Unless
he could be the biggest riser at the safety position out of any player in this class. I mean, he was getting fourth and fifth round talk probably around February, and now he's getting late first round talk.
There's always
early
a
second
player. There's always a player at a certain position every year, no matter what the position is, that guy goes ahead of a couple other players that were the consensus one and two, right? I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, Gino, if Savage went ahead of both Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and Azeer Adderley.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to look at it at the top three at any respective group, I would say that could be shaken up. I think, like, defensive interior, like, Quinnen's going to go one, maybe Ed Oliver. I don't see it shaking up much more than that. Like, running back, Josh Jacobs, Darrell Henderson, we see that. Wide receiver, it's kind of up in the air. I could say that'd be a close second, but...
Well, and right, like, let's go back to 2016. I mean, how many people thought Corey Coleman was going to be the first receiver off the board
out of
Baylor? Nobody
did. That's a great example.
Yeah, I mean, that could be much like safety this year. Again, I would not be shocked, and neither would you. Like, I like Gardner Johnson and Adderley a little bit better, but if Savage went over those two, I wouldn't bat an eye on Thursday.
No, I wouldn't be shocked at all. We talk about how great that second round territory is for safeties, but man, getting into the third day, there are still plenty of names on the board. You got Malik Gant out of Marshall, Evan Worthington out of Washington, out of Colorado, mind you. But Sheldrick Redwine, man, I'm surprised he hasn't been talked about more because what he did at Miami was pretty impressive for the secondary that they had. He could cover really well. He's a very strong possibility for that big nickel position.
He's a former
because
corner,
they
actually.
Love the, yep, that's why he's so good at playing man coverage and for how much they like to put their safeties in man, for how much they're going to have to drop down Malcolm Jenkins into the box to replace their weakness at linebacker. Redwine is a guy that if you need 20 to 24, 5 snaps a game in coverage, he's a guy that can do it against tight ends. He could potentially cover running backs. He could cover bigger wide receivers. He's a guy that if you want to wait on safety in the fourth round when you have two picks, you better be putting a card with Sheldrick Redwine's name up there because a player of his caliber doesn't sit around in many drafts.
And here's another point about Redwine. I think it's kind of interesting when we talk about Rodney McLeod. Jim Schwartz doesn't always blitz, right? But when he does, like, there's always a couple signature moments where Rodney McLeod is they dial up that
Redwine
free safety
has the
blitz.
Juice, man.
Yeah, I think it's very similar where those very few times that Schwartz does dial up a blitz, McLeod was always the guy that coming from the safety spot, he could get after the quarterback. Redwine's also got that juice. He had 3 sacks last year at the U. He had 64
tackles.
He's like
a dart coming off the edge.
Yeah.
Like you don't see him and he's just there.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's a versatile piece, and I think he's exactly what the Eagles like, and who knows how the safety class goes. Maybe there's a run on them in the first round at 20, or maybe the Eagles just pass on them in the first two rounds with McLeod and Jenkins still there, and you like a guy like Redwine coming back in day 3, I would be very happy with him. So I actually had him on my list as well, Gino, so he was my second guy, and I'll kind of wrap up my portion of the show with Florida State defensive tackle DeMarcus Christmas. I think he's someone that if you get later on, still a lot of upside. He is a grappler. Like, it is hard to tie that dude up. I think his hand moves are actually the strongest part of his game. Extremely powerful. If he gets underneath you, I mean, he is going to move you off your spot if you're an interior offensive lineman. I thought his run stopping was pretty impressive next to Brian Burns. He's a big hoss, and I think if, you know, you talked about it a lot when we did the Locked on the Mocks. Let's say they do take Jeffrey Simmons, who the Eagles do like, and you kind of put him on the back burner until November, December, maybe even you redshirt him, whatever. I think you could double dip at defensive tackle as well with the way they like to rotate defensive linemen. I think DeMarcus Christmas is a guy that's got a lot of upside pass rush ability that you can get in day 3.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to stick with you there on pass rushers. And you talk about that, these elements that these late day three pass rushers can bring you. And you just want one or two superb abilities. And I think a guy out of my Oregon Ducks, Justin Hollins, can be a lot like a guy like Christmas can. These situational pass rushers that can come onto the field and get after the quarterback. And a guy like Hollins can do just that. You talk about Jalen Jelks as being the guy that was going to be the top end taken out of Oregon. Man, scoot over Jalen Jelks, because he had an absolutely terrible draft season, had an absolutely terrible 2018. Justin Hollins was the guy at Oregon. He got after the quarterback. Doesn't do it. He doesn't have much bend at all. Doesn't have much power, but he's a freak athlete. And when he gets a good first step on you, he has the ability to get past you with his quick hand movements. He's got a good quick twitch ability. He's a guy that you could see him playing that Chris Long role, like that just get to the QB guy on third down role. And if you're sitting there in the fourth round, take a guy like Christmas, take a guy like Hollins, because these guys, they have that one good skill set that in a rotation can be key late in games, in third down situations. And when you want to give the guys up front a rest and you have the ability to go to a guy like a Justin Hollins as your fourth or fifth edge, you're sitting in great position and you're sitting with great depth that you have a rotation that you could toss Vinnie Curry, Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, Josh Sweat, maybe even Chris Long, and then a Justin Hollins in there. Jim Schwartz is going to have a hell of a 2019 season if he can get his hands on more of these guys in this class.
I'll tell you this, after doing this podcast, I'm so ready to nerd out on Saturday.
I know. I can't wait to sit on the couch at noon and just hear the ding, 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 just one after another, just over and over and over again. We're going to be in heaven. We're probably going to shoot off thousands of text messages to each other, thousands of tweets. It's going to be insufferable, but it's going to be fun, Lou. And this team is in such a great position with a perfect amount of draft capital, can even get more if you want to trade back, if you want to trade some players. You may, maybe Nelson Agholor, somebody throws a two at you, who knows? There's plenty of opportunity to gain more draft picks, plenty of opportunity to make this roster better, and plenty of opportunity for Howie Roseman to show how much better of a general manager he is than just about every other GM in the NFL.
I'm telling you, and we'll wrap up the show. Howie Roseman, by the way, was ranked number two of all general managers on Greg Rosenthal's rankings on NFL.com today. So interesting that you were praising him there, because that actually I just saw it came out.
Didn't even see that article.
Yeah, and he was only behind Bill Belichick, so it's a pretty high praise from NFL.com. But yeah, it's going to be such an awesome time. Again, on Thursday, so we're going to be live. Me, Gino, and Lars. You can find it on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiaseLOE, at Gino_LOE. We're all going to tweet out the feed. We're going to be live on Twitter, on our Spreaker audio feed from 7 o'clock, an hour before the Cardinals go on the clock, all the way until the end of the first round. And then we will continue our coverage on day two, on day three, when the Eagles draft Bruce Anderson. I'm going to be running around acting like they just got the next David Johnson, because I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen. And I got to get
Nazir,
as much Bruce
baby.
Anderson talk. And Nazir, who, man, I don't know who they're going to take. It's such an unknown draft class this year, but that's why it's so much fun. And we really hope that you spend your draft season with us on Locked On Eagles, and we hope you have been for the past 3 months, because we've really enjoyed doing all this coverage for you. So make sure, if you missed any of our other content, we got loads of it, as we've been doing 4 to 5 podcasts for you a week. Just check them out, LockedOnEagles.com, on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, and of course, any podcast platform that you listen to your podcast, Locked On Eagles is available to that, and we always appreciate the fan feedback. Love interacting with you guys on Twitter, and we hope you check out all our stuff. So, for Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. We'll be back tomorrow. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.